And here we are, worldwide live on the internet through VBS Radio. My name is Gijs Minderhout. I'm calling in from Magalia, California, on this holiday, I guess it is today. Forgot the name of it. Happy Monday. It is May the 30th. What is
Memorial
it?
Day.
Memorial Day.
All of you veterans, thank you very much for your service.
All right.
Where would we be without you?
This is Longwell.
You're very welcome.
All right. We had a bunch of people join in here while we got released on BBS online. I welcome you all. If you have a chance, please say a name and location.
It's Ron in Mountain Grove, Missouri.
Good evening, Ron. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Welcome.
Jeannie in Citrus Heights, California.
Hello, Jeannie. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, guys.
Hi, this is Lone Wolf.
Lone Wolf, how are you?
I'm coming along very, very well. Thank you so much.
All right. Great to hear your voice. Thank you for being here.
It's an honor.
Who else joined in? Welcome. If you want to, please say a name and location. All right. I welcome all those who are joining in through EBS Radio. Thank you for participating with this gathering. We're still 5 minutes away from the hour, and we will welcome those that will join in on the phone line. I don't think I've seen the email announcement email yet for today's call.
No, it 2 minutes ago, it hasn't been sent yet.
All right.
Well, how's your journey, huh?
Going well, yes. Being happy, being busy, and healthy, no complaints. Life is good.
Good day to be above ground on Memorial Day.
Yep. As you all on BBS will know, that we do 3 conference calls a week with Wynn and Terry. Monday is random topics. Wednesday is questions that you can submit per email. And on Sundays is what we call the big call, 2 hours of personal and planetary healing. The Sunday morning call is 10 a.m. till noon, and Monday and Wednesday are, as right now, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific. I welcome the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Good evening. Hi, it's Cleo from Connecticut.
Hello, Cleo. Welcome to the call. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for being here.
Good. Thank you.
All right. I'm just going to play a little tune until other people join in on the phone line. I guess I pressed the wrong button. About this one. Hello, good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Marilyn.
Hey, Marilyn. Welcome to the call.
Hi. Hi, hi. Thank you.
All right. Happy Thank Memorial. You for being here. All right. How's the weather in Pennsylvania?
Hot. Humid.
Humid.
It's always humid in the summer on the East Coast.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Prudence in North Carolina.
Hey, Prudence. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. All right. North Carolina represented.
Excuse me?
It's in North Carolina represented. Thank you for being here, Prudence.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we are about at 6 o'clock. Still waiting for the helicopter to show up. And also, still no announcement email. Vin might be taking the day off. See what happens. Then we might start telling some jokes, maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, hi. You know what you get in Texas when it rains?
What do you get in Texas when it rains?
Lakes. We got a ton of them, man.
Oh, yeah. Nice, though. I welcome the next caller. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Hello, Don. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Oh, yeah, Rick, Iowa City.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Hi, okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here, Rick. All the best to you, man.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location. If you want to. Rick, I believe it's you is breathing in the microphone.
Okay.
No breathing.
All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
I don't know if I want to.
All right. That's okay. And we decided to do nothing but telling jokes tonight on the call. So you can stay in the background if you want.
Who's telling jokes?
The public, the audience.
Everybody's telling jokes?
No. It was nothing but a thought at this point.
Did you know that I made up some jokes?
Did you? Good ones?
Yes. One time in my life, I said to myself, I'm going to see if I can make up a joke, and I'll know when I'm successful when somebody comes up to me and wants to tell me my joke, okay?
Yeah.
But no one ever told me my joke, so I didn't succeed in it. It's not really a very good career because you don't make any money from it. But let's see. I decided to make up octopus jokes, okay? And I think the best of the lot was, what is an octopus's favorite gospel song? Anybody know?
I heard it before, so I don't count.
You don't count.
I don't know any gospel songs, so I can't answer.
You know this one. It's a famous one.
Octopus Garden.
Oh, that's a good thing. No, it's put your hand in the hand and the hand in the hand and the hand in the hand of the man across the water. But no one ever came back and asked me it, okay?
We don't have
Wednesday. I had to change careers.
You know? I got one.
He's you got have an octopus?
The whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands.
Is that an octopus joke?
Yeah.
That's a squid joke.
Where's the octopus?
Holding his hands. Holding the world in his hands.
Squid.
Technically, an octopus doesn't have hands.
It has tentacles. He's got the whole... We'd have to convert it. He has the whole world in his tentacles.
Yeah. Any joke that needs that much explanation is
in a suction cup.
Probably not going to get repeated right. too often.
Now nobody read my email because I just sent it out late, right?
I'm reading it right now.
Yeah, talking to dead people.
Yeah. This is going to be really wild, okay? And I wouldn't be surprised if down the road this person becomes a contributor to our calls, okay? And, I better start recording, okay?
Thank you, Wynn.
This conference is being recorded.
All right, this is May 30th, 2016. Everyone everywhere. And I'm going to just ramble for a couple of minutes to give people a chance to read the email. And maybe some more people will show up.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
But, you know, we don't have to try to be entertaining here. I don't try. It's like when we first started these shows, they said, I really didn't intend to do 3 shows a week. And, you know, people that do things like this have to worry about being overexposed and, okay, they can't handle me more than once a month or people get tired of you. You know, it's like if somebody comes to do a lecture, they do one lecture and then they come back again a year later, maybe, and do another one because people get overexposed to the public, right? And probably for some people we get overexposed, maybe some people, but those of you that are, and I know we have a steady group of people that keep returning, and I know that if you keep returning, you're getting it. There's something happening on these calls that goes beyond just being interesting or just being entertaining. There's a quality to it, which even I am intrigued. What's going to happen tonight? In fact, I'm intrigued with my whole life. What's going to happen next? All right? And if you look at some of the history of things we've done with Terry Friedman, with Carla Rucker, with talking to Robin Williams, I don't know if you know the story of that. I don't usually emphasize talking to deceased people, and I don't usually look for it. I did in the case of Terry Friedman, because he's part of our group, and we did with Carla, and they may all come back, but it's not like I'm sitting here trying to make it happen. And then we had a few famous people come into the calls. Well, no, actually, let me see. Well, one of them came into the call, and another one came into a session with Terry and I privately, which was Michael Jackson. And I don't know, maybe some of you have heard the story, but it was early on. I don't even think we were doing conference calls when this happened. And Terry and I were living in her little apartment, her little room in Los Angeles. And we had moved into this really unusual place, which was a former Catholic convent for nuns. It had 40 rooms, I think. And some Koreans bought it and turned it into a rooming house, but it still had a little church room in it. And it was a Korean church that would meet there every Sunday. And it was probably 200 feet from Terry's room. And it felt, some of you may not understand this, but where you live makes a difference. The vibes around you make a difference. And you can transcend a difficult environment, but it's easier to find an environment that's got really good vibes in it. It's easier to keep yourself together. And I really liked this place because it had artists, musicians, an old German opera singer who would practice in his room. They would have students. They had a big, big lunch, a kitchen, where people would just show up and they had food in the refrigerators and people would cook their meals. And it was really like a semi-communal environment with a really good energy. And it was not very far from downtown Los Angeles. Terry at the time was working at an attorney's office in downtown Los Angeles. So she was probably 2 miles from her office. And it was in not the best neighborhood. It was in a semi-Hispanic neighborhood. There would be graffiti. It wouldn't be the place you would go to take a walk. But this place, the former convent, was very secure. It didn't have windows to break into. It had a gated parking lot, so you could pull up, push a button, and the gate would open. And I could have stayed there for the rest of my life. It made me feel very comfortable. And, you know, both Terry and I are not easy to find places to live because we're so weird. And some of you are weird. You know that usually in most places you live, you have to kind of contain your weirdness or you end up getting ostracized by the neighbors. You're too weird for them. And I would say when we were living in this place, people didn't know what we did because we would be channeling. This was early on. And I don't even think we weren't doing conference calls. I had written the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. I was reluctant to talk about this experience we were having with the Elohim because it just all seemed way too far out for the guy writing that book to suddenly be talking to a source that said they created the universe. It just was too much. But in this environment, I still didn't talk about it very much. I don't know if I talked about it to anyone, but because of all the different kinds of people there, and they were all creating the communal energy, there was an energy where people didn't like intrude on your space, but when you met in the kitchen, they would chat with each other. So it was very comfortable. And I believe the creator gods, the creator gods of the physical universe, mostly was written in that little room in that former convent. And Terry would come home from work, and, you know, I'm talking to these guys that say they created the universe, and I remember thinking to myself, well, let me ask the really tough question, and let's see how they answer it, you know, because I had to bring it up. And so I said, if they created the universe, if they were the Elohim, then let's see how they answer these questions about what happens when you die, how do miracles happen, all that stuff. And that became the main, you know, part two of the creator gods of the physical universe, and I was amazed at how they answered the question. I was amazed that they never avoided anything. They really spoke from authority, and most of you have read that book, and you know what I mean. And And one time, we were getting ready to do a session, and Terry said, I can't get through. There's all this static on the line, this anger on the line. What's that? And suddenly she said, oh, my God, it's Michael Jackson. And the first session, he didn't just say, hi, this is Michael Jackson, and I'm talking to you. The Elohim were kind of describing, and Terry was describing, oh, he's really upset. He didn't want... Terry, do you want to say anything about it? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like he was really mad. He didn't want to die, and he was like, I got this tour lined up. I've got to go on the tour. I've got my dancers. I've got my music. Everything is in alignment. I've got to go on this. I promised everybody this tour. I got to show my kids what I can do. He was so angry. And so he was saying all that stuff. He started out by being like just having really dark energy, just coming right over the line, and I was like, what is this? All right, lay it on me, go ahead. And there he was behind it.
Now, interestingly enough, I felt a kind of connection with Michael Jackson years before. And in fact, in one of my many things I did this lifetime, I was fixing intercoms and security systems for this guy in Los Angeles who had a company there, and I was really good at it. My technical side knew how to fix things. And so one time we got a call. I was assigned to go fix a security camera at Michael Jackson's house on Havenhurst Street in the Valley in Los Angeles. The Valley is part of the greater Los Angeles. It's like there's a whole section over these mountains, and there's all these other little cities there, like Sherman Oaks and North Hollywood, whatever. But it's considered the greater Los Angeles. And so, of course, I was fixing intercoms while I was writing songs. And it was how I was paying the bills while I was pursuing my songwriting and writing songs with Brian Holland, and I was sure I was going to be successful at the time. And so when I got to Michael Jackson's house, there was a security guard there, and I sent a note to Michael Jackson, and I said, hey, maybe you'll sing one of my songs. And I think I sent a song up with a security guard. And I had to go there for a second time to work on this camera. And the security guard gave me an album, which Michael had signed. And we never had any comment about singing a song, but I got a signed album. And so now, here Michael is dead, and... some people say he isn't dead. There's people that say his clone died or he's in a clone and he's living in Saudi Arabia. And I think that is quite possible. But I don't know if that's true. But nonetheless, officially he was dead. And at that moment he was dead. He was in the netherworld. And of course, when this happened... Whenever something strange like that happens, I always think, okay, the negative is coming in. They're trying to get me interested. They're masquerading as Michael Jackson. and they're going to screw everything up, okay? So I was distrustful about it. But the second day after that, he came in again, and now he was way more talkative. And I asked him, I was trying to test it. I wanted to see, is this really Michael Jackson? And so I asked him how did he write a song? And then he went through this process of telling me how he wrote a song. And here it is. I'll play it for you. Okay? Oh, no, here. I think then I said, could Terry sing one of your songs? And he was complaining that he couldn't get her vocal cords to work right.
That was terrible because, you know, I could tell what he wanted to do with my voice, but my voice just didn't have the capability.
You know what? I happen to have this uploaded here, okay? I have it uploaded. So here we go. Here is Terry singing Beat It.
Okay, go ahead.
The words to Beat It there's different tracks that are all put together for Beat It. It's like one of the tracks is Beat It, Beat It, Beat It, Beat It. And then there's another track that's put on top of it. So that's all I have to say right now.
Okay,
there we go.
Thanks.
Welcome, bye.
Terry singing Beat It, or Michael singing Beat It through Terry. And then here's another track I have, happened to have it uploaded here, and when I asked him how he writes a song. And you know what? This is something that I knew whoever was talking to me, knew how to write songs, knew the process about it. And I got, here we go.
Okay, we're taping.
Okay. I want to show you how I write a song. For instance, a song about the experience we had today on the call.
He was listening to our call.
First of all, it takes the vibrations that are available, that are coming in. And then I track the vibrations, and I see where the vibrations are going. And then I move into those vibrations and sound it out with my voice. And it makes a distance. This is the one title, Ladder to Heaven, and moving with lower vibrations, or the heavy vibrations of thriller, to take one from fear, scared, and to move into the green, resonant, heavenly sound. I start out with my voice, which is, I can't make this person's voice move like my voice can move. It is fully untrained to move in the ranges where I would go. And to hold air and the muscles are all out of that were making no sounds. But there was a couple sounds which could be investigated. And then the ceiling is very high and going upward. And then low sound coming in. Anyway, that's my little coming up sketch for you. I really wanted to share that, and thank you very much. We appreciate
I appreciate your the words opportunity and wish for the glory performing and dancing that's all for this moment.
Thank you.
That's the end of it. Did you get it?
Huh?
Did you get it?
So we had maybe one or two more conversations with Michael. And then I told Daphne that we had talked to Michael because Daphne was a huge fan of Michael's. And the next day, she emailed me and said, Michael was talking to me. And she said, Michael's telling her how much he loves her and And I said, what is this all about? And then the next day, she sent another session from Michael. And I told her, I said, listen, don't put this on the internet. Because I'm trying to get the Elohim out, and it's like I'm already crazy over the edge to anyone looking at me, and I don't really want to be a Michael Jackson. I don't want to become known for channeling Michael Jackson. And so she sent the transcripts that she had done to someone that has a fairly big website, who is a friend of hers. That person put them up, and in a week, all over the world, her Michael Jackson is posted, up even in, particularly in Japan. And, I said, I just have to work with this. And I don't usually talk about it, because I don't want the focus of our work to be on famous dead people. But then we had, when Robin Williams died, we all put him on the light on a Sunday. And after the Elohim channeling, there was this cryptic thing. Why don't you tell the story, Terry?
Okay. So I asked him, I said, you know, what happened, Robin? And he said, I took a long journey into the land of Nod. The land of Nod, which is like an alcoholic drink. He's joking. And then he said, it's no fun. Don't try it.
So go ahead.
We talked to him some more, and we called in the light at one point, and we got to the point where it says, "And anything negative must leave now." And he says, "Does this mean I have to leave?" And I tried to do the death walk with him to get him to heaven, and he was like, yeah, but the censors over there might be worse than the censors on Mork and Mindy. And then we asked him a bunch of questions, like, you know, what was your telephone number and your address and stuff like that, and he didn't know. And so we said, well, how could you forget it all? And he said, well, you know, with somebody with Alzheimer's disease, their brain is broken. And he says, I don't even have a brain. And so he was just saying stuff like that. He also said that he was a reincarnation of
Will Rogers.
Will Rogers. And so we looked up the pictures, and he looked very much like him.
And, everyone wants to see the picture of Robin Williams and Will Rogers. Send me an email, and I'll send it to you. It's like, I was thinking at the time, you know, when he started telling all these jokes, I said, you know what? I think it's really Robin. And he was also a little skittish. Like, he'd be there and said, I got to go now. I got to check on my wife. I got to do this. I got to do that, right? And Michael was a little skittish as well.
At one point, Michael said, oh, here come the doctors. Maybe they can save me. I got to go.
Yeah. And so, I kept noticing. I noticed some things, and this is the reason I'm talking about this. Yeah, it's entertaining to be. I know it's interesting to hear about talking to celebrities, but I was learning something, and some of the things I learned was that when you die, it still feels like you're alive, but you're in the astral. And oftentimes the person's first experience is they can be somewhere, but nobody knows they're there. They can, they'll go hang out with their wife or their children or people that they cared about, and it's very frustrating for them until they put it together. Wait a second, I'm not alive, okay? And the other thing is that a lot of your memory is stored in your brain. And when you try to get specific details, they can't, they have a hard time accessing it because they don't have a brain. And what I noticed was that when they had some experience in their life that impacted them vibrationally, they were able to bring that, the recall of that incident through the vibration that it impacted them sometimes. But just empirical data, like your phone number, what's your street address, blah, 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 what's this person's name who was in your life, they don't seem to remember, okay? So that's why on these calls, the impact that you have vibrationally is so important because it affects you vibrationally. And the data that your brain is recording, which can be very, very interesting and enlightening, may not continue on the other side. And then there is the, what happens while you're on the astral and you're just moving around and hanging out with your wife and hanging out with this person? Well, for many people, it seems like they just stay on the astral and for a long time. And it gets boring. And it gets like, you know, when do they have to go to a higher level of astral in order to get to the place where they can commune with other beings there. And that, now some people, depending on how they live their life, can be less distorted when they're on the astral. Because you're going to be as distorted on the astral as you are in the physical. The distortions don't automatically heal themselves. So if you've got distortions and you're waiting to die and thinking they're all going to be fixed, they may not be. But one option is to, it's kind of like the higher realms will reach a hand down to get you if you've developed some kind of rapport with them, and especially if you've connected an energy connection with them while you're in the physical. And then there is this tunnel of light where you can move into the higher realms of the astral, which when I've asked questions about it, they say there's cities there, people have sex with each other, they're in an astral body, but it's and I don't know all the details of this. I'm still exploring it, so I'll come back and give you more later. But Terry calls it the heaven realm. But the heaven realms are not really the higher levels of the universe. They're a lower level. But as evolving humans, we have to pass through and learn from these levels to get to the next level, to the next level, to the next level. Now, if you happen to come into this realm from a really, really high place, and you are able to reconnect with your really, really high place in this realm, then there's a good chance when you die, you'll go back to that really, really high place. But keep in mind that we all need healing, and it's not like you want to go to a high place because I want to be as at the top of everything. I want to be as, you know, as high as you can get. The problem is you can't let go of the lessons you need to learn in the lower realms. You can't. And if you learn the lessons in another life, even if you didn't do them this life, you may be able to bypass some realms on the other side. But otherwise, you're going to have to keep up with those lessons either by reincarnating back into a physical body or, let's see, what time is it? 6:36. Either reincarnating back in a physical body or going through lessons in the astral, which are similar to a physical body, but not as dense. That's what I get, you know? So if you're thinking, like, I just want to graduate and everything is going to be in la-la land, if some people are saying that, they might be wrong. Now, of course, I could be wrong, but I'm, like, deriving this a lot from my experiences talking to people who just died in their own astral. And when they disappear, like sometimes like Carla. Now, I don't know. I think Carla might come back again. If I talk about Carla and I look for her, you know, I think I'm bringing in her frequency because I have a very good connection with her frequency. And then maybe even Terry Friedman, but I have a lesser connection with Terry Friedman's frequency than Carla's. So a few days ago, we had an amazing experience. We're still in the midst of it with somebody that died. And it's like I was going in the light, and Terry and I were going to do a session, and she was saying there's some disturbance here. And she said, it's safe. Safe. I said, safe? Is that their name? She said, yeah, that's their name. And then she said, no, Safer. And I didn't know anybody named Safer. And he started making a few comments, and we asked a couple of questions. And he said he was a news commentator, right? And I still didn't know anyone by the name of Safer, who was a news commentator. And I don't watch TV, and I don't think Terry made any connection. Did you know who Safer was when he said it, Terry?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
I watched the news and I saw that he died.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know who he was, and I don't even think I knew that he died. And so we had a brief conversation, and he was like, this was really different from other people. He was saying things like, I've got 80,000 people that think I'm not here. And I'm here. They don't know I'm here. And he was feeling bad because he felt some sense of commitment, connection to these people. He was like, as I then, you know, after we did this, I started searching the internet, and I found all these YouTubes, and I said, this is a great person. He wasn't just a famous newscaster. He was a pioneer. He had guts. He was way more genuinely happy than most of the people on TV. And he was authentic. And he cared. It's like I sent some YouTubes out on the email that I sent out at the last minute. And when he first started as a correspondent for CBS News, it was about 45 years ago. And he was the longest term news person on TV. And he started out just doing stories, and then he went on to be one of the founding people of 60 Minutes. And one of his early stories, it showed the kind of chutzpah that he had. And he did a story on Vietnam, and he was in Vietnam. And he happened to be in a village where a bunch of American soldiers went in and torched the entire village, burned the houses down to the ground. They wouldn't let the people take their possessions out of the houses. And there was no hostility. There were nobody was armed. It was like an innocent village. And it looked like a very horrible act. And it got put on the news. And the head of CBS got a call from then-President Lyndon Johnson and said, can you fire this guy? We can't put stuff like that on the air. And is he a communist? The guy from CBS News said, no, he's not a communist. He's a Canadian. And Johnson said, well, I knew he wasn't an American. And if you don't, whether you recognize his name or not, if you look at the YouTubes, you'll recognize him. You'll recognize him. And just to give you just a short thing on him, I'll play. Let me see if I have it handy here. Here is just, you can hear his voice. You'll probably recognize his voice.
Morris Saber is one of the great correspondents in CBS News history. He's retiring from 60 Minutes after 46 years, 919 stories, and countless unforgettable moments. In a 60 Minutes special this Sunday, longtime friend and colleague Steve Kauf shows how Mornick brought his artist eye and writer's wit to every 60 Minutes piece. Here's a preview with Morley and some of his favorite subjects.
It's something I want to show you.
It's worth noting how many of Morley's best interviews were with women.
Oh, this is my high school yearbook picture.
Oh, God. He simply found them more open in conversation than men. Meryl Streep. She was fascinated by the classics.
And I love Carol Lombard. And I love Kate Hepburn and Betty Davis. And Barbara Stanwyck. I like girls with attitudes, you know. Moxie. There's an old word.
Do you feel like a legend?
I don't think you ever feel like anything. You feel like a boa.
She interviewed Katharine Hepburn 32 years earlier. Talk about moxie. If you hadn't have been an actress, what would you have been?
I never thought. I would have tormented some man, I suppose. I had about eight children.
Okay. I don't know if you recognize the voice, but
you know, he was at the top of the game on TV, right? And so when we talked to him, you know, we had this brief conversation, and then he left. Now, there was something really different in talking to this guy than talking to Michael Jackson and Robin Williams, okay? He was extremely intelligent, and he was extremely sharp, and I was trying to figure out why in the world he came to us, you know? Why? It was like, and he was explaining, remember what he said, Terry, about why he came to us?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He said, like, when he was a news broadcaster, he was looking for a line of communication to get his work out. And so he, on the other side now, was looking for a line of communication to communicate through. And we were doing a channeling, connecting with the Elohim, and he thought this was a very pure communication line that he could join in.
And so I was talking to him, and this guy thinks like a journalist, even on the other side. He's thinking, where's the story? You know, I'm sure he was very creative in the way he interfaced on 60 Minutes, and he did really unusual stories, and many of them human interest stories, or brought out really good aspects of people. He's a very sensitive, intelligent guy. He lived in New York City. He was probably one of the elite in New York City, you know, ran in really respectable circles. But he did not have any elitism in the way that he was communicating with us. And he didn't know what I did. He didn't know what Terry did. All he did was saw some kind of stream of energy on the other side. So then we talked to him again, and I started telling him about what I did, and he kept saying, wow, that's a great story. You know, just thinking like a journalist. And then we had a long conversation, and after having watched some of his YouTubes, I knew we were talking to the same person. I mean, this guy has a very strong communicative ability, a very expressive ability, and he still had it all on the other side. And it's like, you know, I was telling him I was on George Norrie and I wrote a book, and it's like, I feel like I'm talking to a friend, actually. I think maybe we have some previous life connection. I don't know. That hasn't come up, and I don't know if I'll ever know, but it feels that way. It feels like I'm talking to somebody that is really sharp, that's looking at me, that's evaluating things, and he's still learning about me, right? So I don't know where it's going to go. He really likes being a journalist, and so maybe he'll come on our show and talk to us all about life on the other side, okay, as a journalist. And you know, I many ideas crossed my mind, like maybe I'll send, after we do some more audios, I might send an audio to the producer of 60 Minutes, and who knows what would happen from that. And maybe it'll lead to a book that could be, you know, lead people into the rest of our work. And maybe we'll call the book. Terry, you want to hear a good name for the book? Are you there, Terry?
Yes.
Dead Journalists Don't Lie.
I see.
I don't know if that would work, you know. Maybe it's just conversations with Marley Safer. Marley Safer. But take a look at the videos I sent out in today's email. Take a look at them. So you tune into his persona. So if we do a show, if it flows, I mean, who knows? He may decide not to come back. He may float off and say, I'm going to the heaven realms, or who knows what. But I got a feeling he'll come back, because I could feel when we were talking to him, and this was different than anyone else. I felt like I was talking to a person in the room, and I could feel his energy. And he's got a really expansive, loving energy. And I was thinking, you know, this guy might be an Elohim soul. I would think he had to have a pretty high potential to connect with our flow when we were talking to the Elohim, our stream of energy. And then he's still learning. I might have him interview me, and we could have an amazing rapport, because it just felt like he was really present, you know? So we have the audios, but I don't think I'm prepared to play them tonight. I want to edit them in case there's something that, I mean, he was giving his comments about other people. He says, don't put that out. Don't let other people know that, you know? And some of it was public information, like when 60 Minutes first started, I don't know, I know that he was one of the original, what do they call it? Not a journalist, one of the correspondents for it.
Founding fathers.
Yeah, he was one, and Mike Wallace was one. And I certainly remember Mike Wallace, and he was talking about how he and Mike were competitive and everything. And then when I looked it up, there were stories about how he and Mike were competitive. I always do this. I say, I want to, you know, for whatever I can validate, I want to validate it. And I know, I always think, is it possible? This is bleed through. Did Terry already know this? And I know that she knew that he died, but she didn't know who he was. You didn't know. Isn't that right, Terry? You never saw him, right? Did you see him on TV?
Oh, maybe years ago, like 20 years ago. But I never watched it religiously. I would just, if it happened to be on. But I never watched it very much.
I mean, I haven't watched TV for years, but I did watch a long time ago. And I certainly, when I looked at his YouTube videos, I recognized him, but I did not know his name. I did not know his name at all. And I don't think Terry knew his name, except for recently when...
Just in the news. I didn't know his name before.
And I don't think she tied his name to the newscast she watched previously, okay? Is that right, Terry? You didn't tie his name to that, did you?
No, not really. I don't know. It was so long ago. I didn't watch it that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting, like you asked him, like, who is it that you know, like in the news, and like you said, Walter Cronkite. And, like, I'm sitting there, I don't know if that's right or wrong. And then he named other people. But it's like, I don't have any memory banks, like, to access. But so it was just coming from him.
So I'm talking about it because I'm warming you all up. And I'm going to tell him we talked to our listeners because he really likes the idea of still being a correspondent. And he's smart enough to know that if people could really know it was him, it would be like a major impact on the public that life continues after death and what it's like. And that is one big story. So stay tuned. What time is it? It's 6:54. I'll open the mics up. And thank you all for letting me share that. And thank you, Terry, for sharing your side of it. And I'm just curious, any of you remember?
All callers are unmuted.
We got 1 minute. Any of you remember Morley Safer?
Yes,
in Vietnam. He was one of the first reporters to do a story on the ground and talking to the soldiers and everything. He was wonderful.
Oh, actually, before.